Welcome to episode 116 of Motherhood in Hollywood. My guest today is NBC National investigative correspondent Jeff Rawson. He is talking to us about his new book, Rawson to the Rescue, and you guys are going to love the advice and the tips he has to give. So here we go.
Come on, Mama!
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey, everyone. Hope you're having a wonderful week. It has been quite an exciting week around here because, as you know, this is my favorite weekend of the year, my favorite time of the year. It's the Emmys, the Primetime Emmy Awards. This is the 69th annual Primetime Emmy Awards. And as of right now, while I'm recording this, the Emmys have not happened yet. They're happening tonight. And Stephen Colbert is hosting, which I'm very excited about. I think that is an excellent choice. And gosh, there are so many amazing shows that have been nominated, and it's going to be a tough race. I think I also am excited that we're seeing some new faces in the Emmy categories this year, as opposed to, you know, the same people who get nominated over and over again. So I'm excited. Handmaid's Tale has 13 nominations, and that show is incredible. If you haven't seen Handmaid's Tale, what are you doing? It's totally worth your time. It's a good binge, and you'll love it. So yeah, and also was kind of surprised to see how many women from Saturday Night Live got nominated. I feel like Saturday Night Live, I mean, it's been on for so long, and I can only ever remember once or twice, you know, in my lifetime of anybody being nominated. But it seems like in the past several years, a lot more of the women are being recognized on that show, and I personally think it's amazing. Funny women being recognized for being funny and being great at their jobs and great at what they do. I'm all for it. Hint, hint, Television Academy. Do they give Emmys for podcasts? I feel like somebody should have some. I think there is a podcast awards. I feel like I've seen that somewhere before, but I never think to submit for stuff like that. I just don't have the time or the energy. I just take my applause from social media. If somebody tweets at me or posts something on my Facebook, I'm going to assume that I've won. So yay. So thank you to everybody who does that. This week, you guys, has been a really busy week for me. Channing and I got to go to Legoland for a couple of days. Warner Brothers invited us to come down there for a very special press event and to watch Lego Ninjago. And we spent a couple days in the park. We got to meet the cast, Justin Theroux, Olivia Munn, Michael Pena, and just to name a few of the characters. And, oh, a Jackie Chan. Hello. The big character. But it was great. And here's why it's great. Yes, it was fun. We got to go see this fun movie. We had a lot of good times. But Channing was awesome. She was such a good spirit about the whole thing, because some of it was for my work. I obviously had a little bit of work to do, so there was a lot of pictures, a lot of video, and all of that. But she just was like along for the ride, ready to have fun, playing with all the Legos. We stayed in the Legoland Hotel, and she loved having her own little bed. It was a bunk bed, and she had her TV there, and it was just a really fun trip. And I started realizing, like, well, maybe she's getting to the age now where she and I can go on overnight trips together, where maybe we can, you know, plan more quick little family trips together. I'm sort of exploring that option and trying to see what we can do and where we can go, because we're finally, hopefully, out of most of the PP accident phases and all of that. So it was a good time. I loved it. And then I also saw Battle of the Sexes. People are already talking about a lot of Oscar buzz for Battle of the Sexes. Emma Stone is in it. Steve Carell. A ton of actors are in that as well. Alan Cumming, Bill Pullman. Also just went to the press junket for that today. And I have to say, it's kind of, I know I've said this before, but it's kind of a weird world I find myself in, going to press junkets and interviewing people for Motherhood in Hollywood. Oh, and I was at the BAFTA TVT party yesterday, the pre-Emmy TVT party, and got to interview some cast members of The Handmaid's Tale. and Gerald McRaney, who is a legendary actor, and Judith Light. Like, it was just a surreal moment. And sometimes I just have to pinch myself because I feel very lucky and very hashtag blessed to get to combine the worlds and the things that I love to do. And then I get to share it with you guys and tell you all about these movies and TV shows, and also do giveaways and stuff. So I got some pretty cool giveaways coming up. Make sure, so that you can enter them, make sure you're following on my Facebook page, Motherhood in Hollywood. Every Thursday we go live and I do a giveaway. And then also on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood, and on Twitter at Heather Brooker or at MIH Podcast. I just can't decide which Twitter I like better, so I use them both. That, and I have the right to do that. Anyway, so looking ahead, I have some more wonderful podcast episodes coming up. I cannot wait to share those with you guys. But for now, I really want to get to this interview with my guest, Jeff Rawson. He has some, you guys will probably recognize him from the Rawson Reports on the Today Show, but he has some really useful and practical information to give for people who find themselves, like if you've ever been face to face with a contractor or a situation where you could get scammed in some way, he has such wonderful advice and practical tips on how to protect yourself. It's ultimately consumer reporting at its finest, and that's what he does and does well. As I was talking to him, I realized like I think very much with my practical news side of my brain. So when people say, do you have an escape plan during a fire or a flood or something like that? I do, because I think about that stuff all the time. Like if the earthquake hits and we're kind of screwed here in LA, I know where I'm going to go. I know I've got an earthquake kit ready to go. That's just sort of the way my mind works. Like, what could possibly happen, and are we ready to go and be prepared if it does? Now, I can say that. I can say I'm prepared, but if I actually, you know, who knows if I actually am, if I'm, you know, just think I'm prepared. But anyway, regardless, Jeff has some wonderful tips and insights on helping people avoid scams and dangers in everyday situations or large catastrophic situations such as Hurricanes Irma and Harvey or earthquakes and that sort of thing. He's got a new book coming out called Rawson to the Rescue. It comes out on October 10th, and I'm so thrilled that he's joining me on the show today to tell us a little bit more about it, as well as he's giving us some insights on how he deals with his family and his kids when it comes to scams and dangerous situations. So here is my interview with Jeff Rawson. So what a treat we have for you guys today. My guest is NBC National Investigative Correspondent Jeff Rawson. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. This is such a pleasure to talk to you because I'm a fellow news person myself. I work as a freelance news producer. So whenever I get to talk to my fellow news nerds, my peeps, this is so
I've been called the worst. Don't worry.
I'm sure. But I'm so thrilled that you're here because you have a new book that's coming out in October, and it is very timely with a lot of what's been happening in the world today. It's called Rawson to the Rescue, and it's providing the ultimate guide to surviving day-to-day extreme catastrophes in a fun and practical way. So tell me a little bit about this book.
Yeah, I sort of like to look at this as the ultimate handbook to life, the kind of thing that you should just have in your house, because it's not just major catastrophes. And, you know, we've just come through Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. We've had that, but it's also about the everyday problems. When the contractor comes and gives you a quote, is he really ripping you off? Do you really owe that? Is that stuff really wrong with your house? You know, there's that. There's also how to save money in the store. We do safety demos. So it's really sort of everything under that umbrella of just helping people. And I say in the book that, you know, when I'm not on TV, I'm just sort of a regular old schmuck who's trying to figure out life myself. And that's where I got a lot of these ideas, you know, getting ripped off by a plumber or two and learning the tricks to the trade and talking to experts about the buzzwords that we can all listen for and also the buzzwords we can send back to people to let them know, go screw with the next guy or girl.
Yeah, isn't it funny how whenever you get ripped off, you suddenly lights a fire under you? Like, wait a minute, I'm not going to let this.
Well, yeah, it's your hard earned money, right? I mean, you go to work every single day, you get annoyed by your boss, and you're doing it to spend money the way you want. So when somebody comes in and tries to literally put their hand in your pocket, you want to be able to say stop. But in so many cases, we're all just sort of powerless, right? Because I don't know anything about plumbing. I don't know about mold. I don't know about any of these things. So I'm depending on this expert who's over my house to tell me the truth. But there are little things that you can do, and we get into it in the book, about how to save that money. And when they do little things, and they do telltale things when they're trying to rip you off, how you can identify it.
Give me an example of what I can look for, because quite honestly, I'm a person who looks things up on YouTube. If I don't know how to do something, I will look it up on YouTube and try to teach myself. But there are some things that are just definitely beyond me, like a plumbing situation. Or
yeah.
One time I was I didn't trust my mechanic, and so I tried to change my car battery myself, and that was a very dangerous and very foolish thing to do. But I'm just naturally not very trusting of people. Which is terrible. I probably shouldn't admit that.
You and I should go to therapy after this, by the way.
We should. I just feel like, you know, like, I don't know why. Maybe it is that news side where I'm like, hey, this person's trying to scam me.
Well, you know, the thing is that I've learned over the years, and it's so easy to get cynical in news because you see sort of the worst of people. But I have recognized that there are a lot of good people in the world, a ton of them, and a ton of them who are honest and trying to do the right thing. So I don't want to paint this picture that everyone's trying to scam you, but you just never know if you're get which person you're getting when they show up at your door. So for, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book, you asked for an example, is about locksmiths, right? We did a whole hidden camera experiment, and we get into it in the book. And I talk about the other great thing about this book is we don't just give you the tips. I give you these really personal anecdotes and behind the scenes stuff that we couldn't say on television. So we get into all that, but we did this hidden cameras thing on locksmiths, and we invited a bunch over, and we always work with a real expert, somebody we have vetted at NBC and somebody who we've looked into and is certified to come over and say, okay, if I get locked out of my house, how much should that really cost, right? When they come over, what should they do and how much should that cost? And it turns out with a locksmith, the first thing they should do is try to pick your lock, because that's the way to keep the lock intact. Right? If they can pick it, they keep it intact. And it should take just a few seconds, and it should cost just about $100. We invited locksmith after locksmith over on hidden camera. We had one of our producers playing a damsel mom in distress, you know, come over, I need this, you know, fixed. And, you know, all those online ads for locksmiths, we'll be over in 15 minutes and it only costs $15. Well, almost all of them came over, and they basically did to a lock what I would do to a lock. Took a pair of pliers. One of them ripped it off with a pair of pliers, the entire doorknob.
Wow.
And they drilled holes in it. These are people who are coming over, and they are ripping you off. And you wouldn't know it. If they came over with a drill, you'd say, okay, I guess that's just what they do. But here's how they're making the money. They're charging you to do that. Then they've ruined your lock. And oh, what do you know? They have a new lock they can sell you for $200, $250. Wow. So those are the little things. So one of the things we say is, and a lot of these locksmiths out there, for example, don't have a brick and mortar store. You find them online when you're in an emergency, right? You're like quickly on Google trying to find the nearest locksmith who can come over fastest. My advice is to right now, today, for all your listeners, is to drive around town, find a reputable locksmith, some place that has a real office, and program them into your phone as locksmith. And then when you're in an emergency, you're not searching around Google and finding some shady character who's going to come over. You have them programmed in as locksmith, somebody you've looked into first. I say that you mentioned car mechanics. Mm-hmm. I recommend the same exact thing with car mechanics. Always word of mouth is better, and it's best to prepare yourself in a non-emergency situation. Today, when nothing's really wrong, when you have 5 minutes, find out who your friend uses as their car mechanic, if they like them, and program that person. So when your car does break down, you're not in a tizzy and you're ending up spending thousands you don't need to spend with some shady character.
I think for me, part of the reason why I get so nervous in those situations, or maybe I'm so I don't want to say like sus, like calling people out as suspects or whatever, but I get nervous and that I'm not, I don't want to call somebody out when I feel like I'm being ripped off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Cause I'm here.
Yeah. You don't want an awkward situation.
No, because, you
know,
don't.
Yes. And I got to tell you, you know, a lot of people tell me that, and I'm actually the same way. I mean, who wants an awkward situation?
Especially
this person's
if
in your
house.
You don't want to accuse them of something. You don't want to accuse them of something. But there are little things that you can say to them. Like, here's a good little tip for everyone listening. When somebody's in your house and they say to you, oh, well, this is going to be a $5,000 job. You know, you got this wrong, this wrong. Be like, that's weird because I had somebody else in here who said this is a $1,000 job. Mm-hmm. You know, little things like that. And then oftentimes, and that way you're sort of saying to them, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not a moron. You know what I mean? I've actually done my research. Mm-hmm. And it signals to them without making it awkward, you're right in on the situation, and watch how their price immediately starts dropping. We have tested that over and over and over again. That's one of those little things you can say. Or you can say to them, you know what, I'm going to keep looking because I had somebody else tell me it was a little lower. I'm going to keep getting estimates. And you're going to see how they start negotiating with you right on the spot.
I love that because there are times when, as a mom, I'm here at home, I'm with my daughter, and if I have to have somebody come over and I'm like, ooh, I don't know, I feel like there's something shady going on here. Let me ask you this.
My advice on that, by the way, is whenever you have somebody over as a mom and you're home alone and somebody's coming over, is to have a friend sort of on the phone. You know, have a friend.
Yes.
Have a friend on the phone. I think that's the smart thing to do.
I also try to always, it'll usually be my husband, or I'll either have him try to have him come home too. So we're all here together because I think sometimes too, there are men, some of the contractors and stuff who feel like they can pull one over. If you're a mom at home and you're a woman and you don't really understand what's going on or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
so sorry. So, I want to ask you then about some of the larger catastrophes. So obviously we've had some pretty terrible hurricanes, you know, moving through our country lately. And can you truly be prepared for something like that? And then what about the aftermath? What about contractors who are trying to repair your home and, you know, protecting yourself in that way?
Yeah, it's a big question. Can
it
you
is
ever
a big
be
question?
Fully
pre-
yeah. Yeah, can you ever be fully prepared for a hurricane? Probably not, right?
No.
I mean, you can't, but there are things you can do to get ready. I mean, the most obvious piece of advice, and I was in Houston for Harvey in the aftermath of it, and I actually went and I just got back and I covered Hurricane Irma for NBC down in Florida. The one thing I will say, and it seems so obvious, is when the officials say to evacuate, you need to evacuate. I met so many people who are like, oh, it's aggravating, it's annoying, there's traffic. I get it. But there are things that you can do to make that evacuation safer. You should have a go bag when something like this happens, when you first hear about, you know, if you live in one of these areas that's in the cone of uncertainty, there are certain things to have in a go bag. For example, a first aid kit, bottled water, your medications. A lot of people forget this next one, these next two actually tips in a go bag, is your birth certificates, your will, all that stuff. You got to bring that with you in a waterproof bag of some sort, because when you come back and all that's gone, it is very hard to get that back. I always tell people, just before an emergency strikes your area, go to the ATM and take out a bunch of cash, because when you come back, there may not be electricity, which means ATMs may not be working and credit card machines at stores may not be working. And for the essentials, wherever you are, you're going to need cash. So those are a couple things people don't think about. The second part of your question about contractors coming by, in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy, I did a whole sting on these contractors who were going door to door, you know, saying, oh, we're going to help fix up your house. My advice, and it's a, I don't like normally giving blanket advice, but I think in this case it helps. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes to your door saying they're a contractor and they want to help you fix up your house, that's a hard no. That's a pass.
Okay.
Because legit contractors aren't going to do that. You should be seeking out people to come to your house for appointments. You shouldn't be taking somebody's word going door to door in the aftermath. First of all, you have no clue if they're licensed or certified, and it's just a very odd tactic for a successful contractor to go door to door like that in the aftermath of a storm. To me, that's a hard pass. I would say no to all those. And that happens a lot in the aftermath of these storms.
I think too that there's got to be a lot of that that's happening. You know, people going around. I've already been seeing reports about people getting scammed in the wake of Harvey, with like people saying, "Oh, you just need to spend this amount of money, and we'll give you back this much in hurricane relief," and like all kinds of ridiculous scams. For me here in Los Angeles, I am prepping for the big one. There's a little bit of what you're talking about made me think a little bit about prepping for, you know, the end of days, whatever the next big natural disaster is, getting your go bag ready and that sort of thing. So that's what I think about here is the pending earthquake that's going to be coming. So, and that's definitely something we don't see it coming like you do in a storm. It just will sort of happen.
Yeah. Earthquakes are obviously a lot. Hurricanes are very dangerous, but earthquakes can be more dangerous just because there's no warning on
there's
them.
There's no warning, yeah. So I want to ask you a little bit about where you found your passion for this sort of reporting, because I know you have a long career in journalism, but what was it in particular about this helping people to not get scammed and helping people to be prepared that's kind of drawn you to it?
Yeah, by accident, actually. I mean, I got into broadcasting because when I was a really little kid and I couldn't get any girls to go out with me, I was walking through the I grew up in Long Island in New York, and my mother and I were walking through the mall, and there was some radio station set up with like a bridge table, and there was this guy talking into a microphone, and there were speakers, and there were people gathered around and listening to his every word. And I said to my mom, I want to do this. Yeah. People are listening to this guy. And I started being a DJ, and then I somehow got into news, and then I did radio for a long time, and then I did television, I did local television, then I did national television. After covering a lot of stories, I kept being a little unfulfilled. There was a piece of me that was always like, I blow into these places and cover a story for a day, which is very important, and to all the journalists that do that, it's super important. I did it for a lot of years. But I always hated leaving, being like, I felt like, when we pull out of town, that's when the real hard part starts, right? I mean, these people are in need of help, in need of advice. And I didn't think there was a sufficient amount of good consumer reporting going on out there on the network level anywhere. And I felt like this was a wide open genre, something that impacts all of us, right? I mean, this is the stuff that we're talking about in this book and the stuff I do on NBC. It impacts all of us. That's sort of my bar. And I started doing that stuff on the side. I kept doing my regular assignments for the Today Show, but I also started doing these consumer investigations, and I found that those were, A, fulfilling me in a completely different way, and I think they were fulfilling the audience in a completely different way. They rated very well. People were watching them. People were stopping me on the street thanking me for helping them with, you know, telling me their personal stories. And I went to my bosses at NBC, and I said, here's a plan for how we can sort of formalize this and do more of it and help people. And they, to their credit, all on board. They put money behind it and resources. And now we have this big Rossin Reports unit. We have this book. And that's sort of the short answer to how it all happened. Me asking and them saying yes.
I would love to know, if you're comfortable talking about it, about your family and how you juggle this very busy life of doing consumer reporting and working on the Today Show and everything with your family life. How do you balance those two things?
Yeah, I have a very, very understanding wife who happens to also be in the business. She's an she's a vice president, actually. She was just promoted at ABC News.
Oh.
competition in there.
Yeah.
She's the executive producer of a great hidden camera show called What Would You Do on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're in their 12th or 13th season. Let me ask her, actually. She's right over here. Honey, what season are you guys in? 12th. 12th season. 12th. Not bad.
Wow.
Not bad business. So she does a good job. So she is completely understanding about, and she helped me to, you know, she helped me to build this brand. And she, you know, she's my confidant in every possible way. She's the brains behind the operation. And the pretty face. She's very understanding. Look, it's very hard with my kids. I have, you know, I have an 11-year-old and I have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old. And they're old enough now to sort of call me up and shame me. You know, when I was – good example recently was when I was at Hurricane Harvey. In the aftermath, I thought I was coming home on a Thursday. And that night I got sent to cover Irma. And – my 7-year-old daughter called me and said, "You said you were going to be home tonight." And I said, I know. I'm sorry. I have to go to Florida. And she said, "Well, you said you were going to be home tonight." I said, "Right, but I'm helping people." She goes, "Well, you have a daughter. You have to help me too."
Oh.
And it just broke my heart. I mean, she also knows how to manipulate me. I'll give her that. She knew what she was doing. This was no accident. But, that stuff really hurts me. And they're old enough now where they know very well what's going on. And they miss me and I miss them. But FaceTime has been great. A great invention for all of us on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have – this is my job, and I enjoy my job. And when I'm home, I really try – I'm trying to be better at being more present and putting the phone down. And I think it's about quality time when I'm home now versus the quantity of time.
Let me ask you, what kinds of ways do you work in your consumer knowledge and your consumer tips in your parenting life? Or do you at all? I mean, it may be – that's work, and home life is a separate thing.
No, I connect them all together. I got to be honest. And one of the things I talk about in the book is I don't like giving BS advice. Don't panic, or some advice that's completely impractical. Never let your kid do this or that. A lot of this book is, look, your kid is going to do this or that, and you're going to want to let your kid do this or that. Just know that you should be looking out for this when they do. We do a whole hidden camera thing about carnival games, for example. About how so many of them are rigged, right? With those mm-hmm. games at the carnivals.
Mm-hmm.
And my son loves and we also did a piece about how my son loves the claw machine. And
he loved the claw machine.
Yeah, well, guess what? That claw machine in arcades and stuff, there's a way to turn. Arcade owners can actually turn, and we get into this in the book too, can actually set it to actually grab the teddy bears or not any certain number of times per 100 or 1,000
wow.
tries. Like it's all pre, it's a business. It's crazy. And so, look, if it was up to me, I'd never let them play the claw machine because I'm like, this thing is, it's all predetermined. Or those carnival games like the tubs of fun or the basketball. Here's a little tidbit. Did you know the basketball hoops at carnivals? They're often oval. They're not round. But you only get to look at those carnival basketball hoops from the front. Next time you're at the carnival, notice how they have all the prizes or a drape or something on the side, so you can't get that side angle of the hoop.
Yeah.
It's actually oftentimes oval. And the ball, even if perfectly put in there, is barely fits. So you actually have to have the perfect shot. And on top of that, they overinflate the ball sometimes, so they're more bouncy off the rim. So there's a little tidbit too. Anyway, my point is going back to what I said, all that stuff, I would never let my kids play any carnival games. But guess what? Guess what we do every single time we go to the carnival? My kids beg to play the games, and I shell out $20 and they play the games.
See, I was going to ask, so how do you turn off that practical side of yourself with your kids and just go, oh, it makes them happy. This is just for fun. I know we're getting scammed, but they enjoy it. How do you turn
Yeah,
that
I mean,
off?
Look at me. I love shoving money down the toilet drain. But look, it's harder for me, but I say to them, come on, guys, that's rigged. And they say, oh, no, it's not, even though they watch it on TV and they want to play anyway. And at some point, I'm like, this is an entertainment expense. They're having fun, so what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not actually doing this to win that goldfish anyway.
you don't want to take that goldfish home.
My daughter always wins the goldfish, and they always die.
Of course.
They always die within like 2 days.
They always do. I know. I just had a friend who got one at the Santa Monica Pier, and she brought it home, and the next day posted a picture of the dead fish. So
yeah, yep.
it literally yep. happened overnight, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, we've had a lot of funerals in this house.
Oh, gosh. Well, let me ask you then, so what is the number one thing that people are going to take away from in your book? Like, what are the top themes that they're going to walk away after they read it and go, okay, I feel empowered in this way?
Yeah, I think you just used the exact correct word. They're going to feel empowered. Suddenly, when you're home, you're not going to feel completely exposed when the contractor walks in, or the guy to fix your air conditioner, or the plumber, or when you go to the mechanic, or when you go to the car dealer, or when a hurricane's about to strike, or when you're about to drive through a flooded out street and the water starts rising. I mean, I think you're going to feel empowered, because you're going to know little tidbits of what to say, what to listen for, what to do when these things happen, because I put myself through all of these things. All of our pieces are experiments. I don't just go out and talk to experts. I actually throw myself into these situations so I can actually give the advice. And I never tell anyone, oh, don't panic when something happens, because let me tell you something, as somebody who's been through all this and all these experiments, you do panic. And you have to understand that you're going to panic. You know, but you have to train your brain to handle certain situations, right? So it's, I always say it's like athletes, right? Even the best athletes in the world, they practice every single day. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't we practice a fire escape drill, for example, with our family? So many families, that's in the book too, tell us, you know, most people, do you know, most families have no fire escape plan. They've never practiced it with their kids. They've never even spoken about it with their kids. And most people have told me over the years, I don't need one. I mean, I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom in the dark. I can feel my way out of the house in the dark. I know this house like the back of my hand. Mm-hmm. So we've put families through the ringer. We've actually done the tests, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. And they fall all over themselves, and it's like a death trap. So it's one of those things about training your brain for these situations. So when it happens, you're ready. And that's what this book is, empowering.
I love it.
And it will save you money. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And this is such great information. And I think that you're absolutely right. The fire drill is something so essential that we don't even think about. And I know that you cover so many more topics in this book. And everybody, Rawson to the Rescue is going to be out October 10th in stores and online. Jeff Rawson, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me and be on my show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. I'm going to put information up on motherhoodinhollywood.com about the book and where you can find it. I hope you all have a wonderful week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.